Chinook. It's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskans.
Astach as I'm crying. Netzach as you are crying. Atzach, he's crying. Tzatzach, the two of us are crying. Ochtzach, you guys are crying. Chatzach, they are crying.
Welcome to Chinook Echoes, and welcome to our lesson in Koyukon, one of 11 Athabaskan languages of the interior. Our teacher is Eliza Jones of the Alaska Native Language Center here at the university. The purpose of today's lesson is not just to hear a few words in Koyukon, but rather to hear how the language works, how complex it is, and how it's based on concepts entirely different from English.
I'm working on a Koyukon verb dictionary. There's been a noun dictionary been printed, but a noun dictionary is easy to put together because it's just a bunch of words, and it's just name of things, and it has a few verbs in it, but not very much. And the verb of the Athabaskan language is the hardest. It's a lot harder than noun.
Does it compare at all to English with different tenses, or is it completely...
It's different. It's just completely different. It's there are many kinds of verbs. But there's group of verbs. Some verbs we call descriptive verbs. They're probably the easiest kind of verbs to do because that's the ones that big, little, colors and so on goes. It fits into that, and so you could say it is red. It was red, and so on. And it's the stem doesn't change. That's one of the hardest part of the Athabaskan writing Athabaskan dictionary is that when you change the tense of a verb.
Mm-hmm.
The stem also changed, and what I mean by the stem is the main part of the word.
So it's not just a matter of putting a different ending on the same word. You have to learn a whole different word?
Yeah. The language has genders. Some verb, like the word like cry, wouldn't take a gender because it's an intransitive verb. But if you're a verb of handling something, when you're talking about handling something, we have genders for different kind of things.
Oh, like a handling a thing that's a feminine kind of a thing, or
yeah, like
handling the masculine
they
kind of a thing.
Friends have masculine and feminine, and I don't know what else.
Mm-hmm.
But Koyukon have five classes. The majority of things would fall in the zero class, which is nothing,
uh-huh.
No gender at all. And then we have class, which is when you're talking about places, area, weather, all those goes under the ch. And then you have a D class, and all wooden objects would go under that. And then we have an N class, little things would go into that class, like little round symbol, marble, and so on.
Needles and things like that? Or that
not necessarily needles. Some things are arbitrarily assigned. So, some things you just have to learn. And the DN, several kind of things goes into the DN class. But like a wooden, small cylinder wooden objects like pencils, cigarettes, and a few other things like that would go into the DN class. And other things that goes with into DN class would be like heavy round objects. Like a ball would be la'on if it's sitting down. If the ball is there, it's la'on. Mm-hmm. But if you put a cabbage next to it, which is heavy, you'd say denal on. And by saying denal on, you know that the heavy thing, a heavy cabbage is there. That describes it. And there's a lot more than this to the grammar. You know, you have things like classificatory verbs, which is when you're handling things. We have 13 classes of stems. Use a stem for different kinds, a different shape object. Like if you're talking about things sitting on the table,
like your hat.
My hat.
Okay.
Like this hat here would be la'an.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's a zero gender solid mass object sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
But this paper, which is flexible, a cloth-like thing sitting there would be atkus.
And you're describing the different...
You're describing the physical characteristic of the object that's sitting
there. And that necessarily is not the name of it. There'd be a separate name for hat and a separate name for
paper.
For
you're paper. Just describing that paper-like thing is there. So there could be maybe 10 different kinds of things on the table, and I could tell you... No, at cool nida. I say, give me that paper-like thing that's sitting on the table, and you'll know which one to give me because, and you know, it's described.
Okay, let's try that. We have a nice soft knit hat,
mm-hmm.
a legal pad, a watch, a single piece of paper, and a shoe.
Okay.
On the table, and we're rummaging around for what else?
And okay, let's pretend this is a bag. Well, actually, it is a bag.
Okay, in the bag. Let's hear the differences, and we'll have to translate.
And this is a plural thing, and this is a jar of something, or you know, a bottle of something.
It's a chapstick kind of a thing, and a brush.
Okay.
Okay. Now.
Okay. This. Watch is la'an, which is goes in a solid mass, like object lying there. This hat, la'an, so also goes in the same class. This keys, which is a bunch of keys,
mm-hmm.
lid law. See, watch la'an, keys, lid law. And the ill in the word means it's in a state of position.
Now we have a brush.
Yeah, this brush is dalton.
Dalton.
Mm-hmm.
And the keys were litton?
Litlaw.
Litlaw, okay.
Mm-hmm. Litton and watch la'an.
Okay. Legal
and
pad?
Well, just pretend it's just one page of paper. Atkul.
Okay.
Atkul. Pen denalton. Shoe la'an. Chapstick. Chapstick would be, it's pretty big size. It's not one of those little ones. So it would be dal'an. Dal'an is like, you could say, canned milk dal on, lotion dal on, and anything that's jarred or canned, and the purse atlton, like a bag thing, means it's enclosed in a bag. I could also say, I could name something that's inside the purse, like I could say dinga atlton. Dinga means money, and by saying atlton, I'm telling you that it's enclosed in a bag.
Everybody's going to know what I have in my purse. And the name of it in Koyukon.
And then you have, if I had a cup of coffee here,
mm-hmm.
I would say coffee lakhon. Because that means coffee in a container is
mm-hmm.
sitting here.
But you'd use the word coffee.
Uh-huh. Well, coffee is imported.
Yeah.
So
you know the word for coffee.
Yeah. I think they had a word, Russian word originally, but everybody started saying coffee.
I'm going to take my shoe back. My foot's getting cold.
When you try to put this all in a dictionary, what do you have to do? You have to make a grammar book first.
Well, no. We have sort of a device where we write down a theme, where you write down the necessary prefixes and a set of verb stems. If I'm writing a theme for the word cry, I would write down the prefixes, the necessary prefixes that it needs, plus the verb stem set, and I'd put the gloss as to cry. And then underneath there, I'd put in example sentences, actual words. And then I say, he's crying, or he cried, or, you know, something like that.
So it's really not very much like an English dictionary, is
it? It's not going to be anything like an English dictionary. I mean, you'd have to know, I really regret that it's not going to be as easy to use as an English dictionary, but there's no way that, you know, it could be done. I think once the dictionary is done, we'd have to teach people how to use the dictionary.
Eliza Jones of the Alaska Native Language Center. She's compiling a dictionary of Koyukon verbs. For Chinook Echoes, I'm Paula Schiller. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profile, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Patterns. I'm Nancy Harris. On this program, we look at the Alaska Native Health Service, what it is and what it provides. To explain some of the programs and some of the history of Native Health Services is Tom Hartrick, Director of the Interior Alaska Service Unit.
The Alaska Native Health Service is part of the U.S. Public Health Service, and the U.S. Public Health Service has had the responsibility since 1955 of providing health services to Alaska Natives and Indians in the lower 48. The agency in the U.S. Public Health Service that has that responsibility now is called the Indian Health Service. In Alaska, it's referred to as the Alaska Native Health Service. The Alaska Native Health Service is sometimes called ANHS, and there are 7 Alaska Native hospitals that are scattered throughout the state. In this, the interior area, there's one at Tanana. There's one on the North Slope at Barrow, at Kotzebue, at Bethel, at Kanakanak, which is right near Dillingham, at Sitka, and also the Alaska Native Medical Center at Anchorage. The Alaska Native Health Service provides, besides hospital services, provides dental services, preventive health services such as health education, environmental health services, construction of water and sewer facilities in the villages. It provides mental health services, some alcoholism services. Basically, that's pretty well it.
As it stands now, any Native person and their dependents are eligible for treatment. But if a non-Native husband was married to a Native wife, he wouldn't be eligible. Is that correct?
there's been a lot of controversy about non-native husbands receiving care and being entitled to the same care as their native wives. When the federal government first got into health care over 100 years ago, non-Indian husbands were specifically excluded by law from receiving health care services. The information that I have on why that was done was to discourage white men from taking advantage of Indian women to get the benefits that they had. Now, being 1979, and there's been a lot of things that have happened as far as equal rights for men and women, this has been challenged. And the other federal agency that deals, has the most dealings with the Indian people, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, has changed their policy where they will provide services for Indian or non-Indian husbands of Alaska Natives or American Indians. The Indian Health Service attempted to follow that same policy that the Bureau of Indian Affairs is. In other words, that non-Indian husbands would now be eligible for health care services. There were some of the Indian tribes in the lower 48, primarily in the Southwest, that objected to this and required, because the Indian Health Service had not gone through the legal procedure of making the changes proposed in their regulations, not having gone through that advertising policy, that the whole question of non-Indian husbands being eligible for health care services has gone out the window, and essentially the policy is now that they are not eligible, but it is expected that probably within a year to 2 years that they will be eligible. The reason why some of the lower 48 Indian tribes challenged this was not because they had anything against non-Indian husbands, but it's been because of the limited dollars that are available for health care services, and there is no assurance, and there is a good probability that those health care dollars would not be increased, even though that the number of people that need the services would be increased.
Do you have any kind of program where doctors or dentists might go out to villages?
The doctors travel to every village at least once a year, and sometimes two or three times a year, depending on the size of the village and the medical needs. The dentists also travel to every village at least once a year, and more often based on population and in need.
And the doctors that travel out to villages, what sort of things are they doing?
The doctors, when they travel, are interested in two things. Number one is screening patients for serious conditions that may not have been picked up by the health aide. But that is becoming less and less of what the doctors do as the health aides get more skilled, because the health aides are able to recognize medical problems sooner. And therefore, what the physicians are doing more of now is working with the health aides and trying to upgrade the health aide skills to reinforce the training that the health aide has had. Another thing that the doctors do is provide follow-up on patients that have had surgery to check up and see how they're doing.
Could you explain a little more about the health aid program?
The health aides kind of evolved over the past 20 years from kind of a person in the village who maybe because of their interest picked up a little bit of medical information, and over the years have become very highly trained people. The health aides are trained in two different ways. There's some basic health aid training, a basic curriculum that the health aides go through in various phases, which last from 4 weeks. There's a couple of 4 week sessions, 2 week sessions that recur as the health aide is able to handle the training, and also as the health aide has time to get the training. It's in Anchorage and is provided by the Alaska Native Health Service Community Health Aid Training Program. Sort of a follow-up training that is more regionalized, since the training in Anchorage is for the health aides throughout the state of Alaska. Most of the Native regions provide regionalized training that allows the health aides to learn more about problems that are unique to their area as opposed to statewide problems.
Do people living in rural areas of Alaska have any sorts of health problems that people living in urban areas wouldn't have?
Well, there's a couple of big problems. Number one is that the Alaska Native people have tremendous accidental death and injury rate. The accidental death rate is about 8 times the general U.S. population. Again, I think it's because of the living on the water, relying on boat transportation, relying on snow machines, being out essentially in the middle of nowhere. If somebody gets in trouble, they're on their own, and a lot of times that help is not available as it would be in a urban area. Another problem, which is it's become a tremendous problem, is the alcoholism problem. And there are a number of people who feel that is the primary cause of the large number of accidental deaths and violent deaths. This has become it's been a very devastating problem throughout Alaska, and particularly in the rural areas.
But there are now some alcohol educational programs going on?
There's some. It's getting started. The problem, I think, is everybody has recognized alcoholism as a problem. And there have been a number of programs which have attempted to do something about it. So far, not too many have been very effective. The most effective program, if you want to call it that, has been where the people in the community have decided to pull themselves together and either ban the sale of booze in the community, or to somehow decide that they themselves were taking control of their community and were going to control the problem on their own. And that has seemed to be the only effective way of a community dealing with the alcohol problem.
Tom Hartrick, Director of the Interior Alaska Service Unit for the Alaska Native Health Service. In a future program, we'll talk to health aides and counselors, and we'll find out what programs are being provided by the regional nonprofit corporations as they take over more and more of the federally funded health services. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.